How does a country that suffered searing conflict survive? How do the people of Rwanda, Cambodia, Northern Ireland, and Lebanon pull the pieces together and even thrive? That's the inspiration behind a new multimedia project called Imagine, Reflections on Peace. Gary Knight is one of the editors of the project. He is an acclaimed photographer and co-founder of the Seven Foundation, which produced the book that's part of the project. Gary, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. Great to be here.
We're also joined by Robin Wright. She's a longtime foreign correspondent and writes for The New Yorker. She wrote about the wars in Lebanon and life there now for this project. Hi, Robin.
Great to be with you.
Gary, let's start off with you. What were the threads that you felt the need to pull together for this project?
Well, after working so much in war zones during the late 1980s through to the mid-2000s, you know, I realized that although peace was the main objective in any war that I covered, when I look back at all of these stories that I covered, peace seemed to be somewhat disappointing, and peace hadn't, in fact, delivered what the populations of the countries I've been working in had expected. So the idea when we started the project really was to just go out there and examine why and understand, you know, how one could make a better peace.
How one could make a better peace, and you say that process largely goes undocumented. So how did you go about documenting it? Talk about the reporters who covered it then and you sent back out again now.
So we sent people back to Cambodia, to Rwanda, Lebanon, Bosnia, Northern Ireland, and a team to Colombia, which when we started the project was still a very fresh peace process. And it was very important for us to assign photographers and writers who had decades of experience not only covering the wars, but covering the aftermath.
One of those reporters and writers that you sent out was Robin Wright. And Robin, I wonder if you can tell us, you had lived in Lebanon for 15 years. There, we can't even call it a war in Lebanon. It was actually a combination of wars. And you went back to talk to the people after the bloodshed. And Assad Chaftari, I think it is, he fought for Lebanese forces, a Christian militia. And he told you, you met him at a Starbucks and talked about his time as one of the top intelligence officers. He said, my task was to decide the fate of those who were rounded up at checkpoints, he's talking about in the Muslim quarters of Beirut, and decide whether someone should be spared or exchanged or killed. A human being was little more than a product to me. This is a man who you say has a Christian education. He goes to church, goes to confession now, and finds some minor little thing to confess and says nothing about the killings. How did you make sense? How does he make sense of his history and what he was telling you?
Well, he used to go to confession and not talk about those who he killed, but he'd gone through an epiphany, partly because of his wife, who introduced him to a group of wives who were trying to bring their husbands together to get them to think about what they were doing. And he was one of those rare people who was not only aware finally of the wrong he had done, but wanted to do something, and said he could never do enough to change or alter the evilness that he had engaged in. He started a group called Fighters for Peace, and they would go to high school because the war was not taught in Lebanon, still isn't. And they would go to high schools and talk to groups about how they used to try to kill each other. And he actually pulled together people he knew he was trying to kill, and how it destroyed their lives, their families, their country, their communities, and how it had to be put to a stop. But the lesson of Lebanon turned out to be that it is the individuals who are trying to create a different alternative rather than the state itself, which was not doing very much. And that was true. I lived in South Africa as well. You saw Desmond Tutu, who fostered the Truth and Reconciliation Committee to try to bring peace. But that's very rare in war zones. Countries coming out of conflict don't have the resources, the know-how, the tolerance, or the courage to do those kinds of things.
Gary Knight, could you talk to us about what happened in Rwanda? This is in 1994, the genocide in Rwanda, and the issues at hand, and there are so many different issues, sectarian issues, territorial issues that can cause war. what happened to Rwanda then, and this is, I think, one of the most positive after-war stories that you have in the book.
Yes, whilst there are still pretty serious political problems, I think, in Rwanda, it certainly has been, I would argue, the greatest success, perhaps along with Northern Ireland, of the countries that we've looked at. And I think, as everybody knows, there was a very violent genocide perpetrated by Hutus against Tutsis in Rwanda. The country was completely broken. And at the time, I remember talking to colleagues. I was covering the war in Bosnia at the time. And if you had asked any of us which of the two countries, Bosnia or Rwanda, would have been the most successful now, two decades later, I don't think any of us would have thought that Rwanda would have been, but it has. And there are some, you know, key reasons why. The process of reconciliation, you know, truth and reconciliation, the Gacaca courts that were borrowed from South Africa have been instrumental in allowing people to move forward. And moving forward is critical. And the generation that lives through the war, if it doesn't process the war and move forward, it's very difficult for subsequent generations to do so. And the act of personal forgiveness, absolutely critical. And I think an issue that Robin touched on there when she was talking about the wives of warlords bringing their husbands together, the role of women in post-conflict societies is absolutely critical and has a major impact on the success of peace.
Yeah, there's a quote from the book. Research shows that where women have access to power, war is less likely to break out in the first place. When you talked about the reconciliation, there are, and we should say this is a massive project that you embarked on here that includes videos. And in one of the videos from Rwanda, there is a photographer, Jack Picone, who had in 1994 illegally crossed the border to document the Rwandan genocide. He, 25 years later, returned wondering if the country could find light out of such horrific darkness that he had documented. And he spoke with a pastor who was there in 1994. Let's listen to this bit of tape.
I think most of us who survived, most of us learned to sublimate the pain and the anger, because we were thrown into the rebuilding process involved in reconciliation. But unless you handle it properly, sure, it will come back to haunt you. So you simply learn to let it go.
So what comes through here is that there's peace in that, in schools, for instance, kids who used to have to say in the same classroom, I'm a Hutu, I'm a Tutsi, they're not asked that anymore. Does that mean that there are no differences? Does that mean that they're able to live peaceably together? And we should say that Hutus and Tutsis, who were the Tutsis victims of some of the Hutu slaughter, are indeed living together side by side. What kind of a peace is that?
Yes, if you go to Rwanda now and you ask people about their ethnicity, they won't answer the question. But it doesn't mean that differences don't still exist. I think what's happened, though, in Rwanda is that people have understood how to patch over those differences, how to forgive, and how to move forward. And I think that's really, really critical to understand. And that's where Rwanda has been massively successful.
So just to summarize, and there's so much more to talk about, and we'll include much more on the website. I wonder if maybe, Robin, you can tell us if what the lessons are that you drew from your time there and going back now and talking to the people now about the nature of war and peace, a huge question, but particularly how people and how countries survive.
Well, the human spirit is, obviously, we are a species that struggles to survive, wants to survive, and biologically we're set up to make every effort to do so. But we also have, you know, other instincts, and sometimes we are not educated or knowledgeable enough to understand people who are different from us. And that leads to, in most wars, you know, some flashpoint that was not intended to start a war, but in fact does. And it was a shooting incident in 1975 that started Lebanon's war. And as we were putting this book together, the United States starting facing its own racial challenges and tensions. And I have thought often that how relevant this project is, not just to wars in other countries, but really to our own situation. And that peace is the best in the human spirit, but it is much harder than war, which involves some of the kind of primordial instincts. So the book was fascinating, both in understanding our times and the world and warfare, but it was also kind of a reflection of human history and the challenges we face in every country, not just in other places.
Very good to talk to you. New Yorker writer Robin Wright, photographer and editor Gary Knight, talking about the book Imagine, Reflections on Peace. You can see some of the photos from this multimedia project at hereandnow.org. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.